Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, a podcast brought to you by the Triad Network. This podcast is designed to share trending topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a behavioral and mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, a Triad production. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor, and today I'm joined by Josh Halu. Josh is the founder and CEO at the Psychedelic Exchange, an online platform for community support, education, and a therapist directory specializing in psychedelic psychotherapy. Josh is a dynamic leader committed to revolutionizing mental health care through the innovative use of psychedelic therapies. His background, steeped in military leadership from his time at West Point and as an Army officer, fuels his dedication as a critical mission, bringing the number of veteran suicides down to zero. With his deep understanding of mental illness, including trauma, depression, and PTSD, as well as the unique challenges faced by veterans, Josh is pioneering new approaches in mental health care. He strives to transform the landscape of treatment and support for all, while destigmatizing the use of psychedelic medicines for mental wellness. We're excited to have Josh with us today to discuss psychedelic psychotherapy and his platform, PsychX, that is creating a unified resource for qualified therapists specializing in psychedelic therapies, community support, and psychoeducation. Josh, welcome to our show.
Wow, thank you so much for having me, Graham.
Happy it's really nice to have you here. Yeah, thanks for joining us. Hey, you know, as we start out today, would you just give us a little bit of your story and the things that occurred in your life that inspired you to create PsychX and your network of resources?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Graham. So my journey to psychedelics, I think, was anything but typical, but maybe whose is. Everybody's mental health and life journeys, I think, are unique and individual, and mine fortunately led me to found the company called the Psychedelic Exchange, which, as you mentioned, seeks to create access and connection between individuals seeking psychedelic-assisted therapy and clinics and providers and individuals providing those therapy services. And for me, finding psychedelics was an enormous turning point in my life with regards to my mental health and my mental fitness and my ability to live a whole life, a full life with gratitude and joy, where in the past I was plagued with a lot of PTSD from traumatic experiences, both in childhood and in the military as a veteran. And also, I think that my journey to psychedelics represents a life lived, you know, with a lot of different avenues and opportunities taken through life, and just, you know, finding yourself in unique situations that created traumatic experiences that left lasting impacts. And finding psychedelics allowed me to completely move toward the healing journey and committing to understanding my own mental illness and my own challenges and other challenges that veterans and first responders and really, you know, most people in the world experience with one form of trauma or another, that until we focus on healing and really, really becoming full, you know, you're kind of prevented from living a full life. Yeah. So from my perspective, life started when I lost my father to suicide when I was 4 years old. And that was like really the first memory I have of life was going to his funeral, and it really cemented mental illness and suicidality into the fabric of my family's existence. And losing my father, that kind of spiraled my family into a number of different directions. From, you know, my mom was diagnosed bipolar, and my siblings both had depression, and I was in and out of therapy for several years. And then eventually my mom and my stepdad sent me away to military school when I was 14 years old, which is, you know, in and of itself, incredibly traumatic. Yeah. And, you know, I was getting into a lot of fights as a kid, and I was, you know, challenged with ADHD and, you know, inability to really focus and commit myself to education. I was getting in a lot of trouble, like, you know, like kids do. But for me, it was causing a lot of impact to my family, and my mom and my siblings were already having a ton of challenges with mental illness. So I kind of felt like I was abandoned and sent away as a child, after also feeling abandoned by my biological father.
You bet.
And very quickly into high school, I decided that I was going to make the military a career or and an avenue through which I was going to be able to take like control of my own life. And I learned about the service academies at that point in time, like Navy, Air Force, you know, West Point, Coast Guard Academy. And as a sophomore, I just decided that I was going to apply for one of the academies and kind of gear my entire high school journey to getting access into an academy and then making the military, you know, the avenue that I was going to take life into my own hands.
That's quite so a decision for a young man at that age. That's quite a decision for a young man at that age to be that focused.
Yeah. Well, so as a freshman in high school, I first did one semester in Denver at a public school. And then halfway through, right as I started the second semester of my freshman year of high school, my parents told me, you're going to military school. So all of a sudden I found myself in basic training as a 14-year-old, getting my head shaved, and I was, you know, getting yelled at and doing push-ups and learning how to march and shining my shoes. And it was a completely 180, you know, world change difference from where I was. And I rebelled for the first semester. I mean, you got D's and F's, and I got in lots of fights, and I was getting in trouble and having to do extra duty on the weekend and getting demerits and all that. And my parents, when I came home for the summer before my sophomore year, made it abundantly clear that if I were to get kicked out of my military high school, that I wasn't welcome back home. So it made the idea very real for me that I didn't have any other choice in the matter, and my family wasn't going to welcome me back into their household. So I showed up the very first day of my sophomore year of high school, and I was in my very first class of the year, and it was a junior ROTC class that everybody was required to take, and an officer came into the classroom and asked the classroom if anybody was interested in attending a service academy. And a few of my friends got up and were like, oh, I'm kind of interested. So I just got up and went to see what it was all about. And the officer said to the group of us in his office, if you're interested in attending a service academy, we've got to look at your academics and your entire records and your extracurricular activities and your sports and what you're building toward. And that starts now. And really it started last year, but it's an incredibly, you know, competitive process, and you need to get a nomination from a senator or a congressman. And so everything you do fits into your application, and it starts now. And so we looked at my grades. I had like, you know, D's and F's. I got maybe less than a 2.0, had no sports. I wasn't participating in any activities. And he was like, you're going to have to make a big change if you want to actually attend a service academy, like a complete change. And it was like in my head at that moment, everything just clicked into place that I had an avenue that I could take to take control of my life, and I had to commit to it. And now I had a why, and I had a purpose, and I had a North Star. And from that moment forward, I got almost straight A's the rest of high school. I lettered in 3 high school sports. I, you know, became a leader in the Corps of Cadets at this military academy, you know, National Honor Society, like really committed myself to academics and to you know, diverse extracurricular activities. And I found out very early in my senior year of high school that I got admitted into West Point. And so it was like, you know, I was so grateful to all that work paid off. You know, it was a complete gamble. It was the only college I actually applied to. But having that discipline and that structure that the military gave me kind of gave me that. There's a Jocko Willink quote, where it may be based on his book. I think it's called Discipline Equals Freedom. And that's what I really found through the military environment, is that I could create my own future and create my freedom through discipline and rigor and structure and committing to that avenue and that approach in life. And it was very effective for me. So then I went to West Point. I became a aviation officer. So I graduated after 4 years and went to flight school, became a Black Hawk helicopter pilot, and became an Army Ranger, and, you know, went to war in Afghanistan, spent 9 months as a pilot, as an operations officer, managing aviation operations across Afghanistan, managing downed aircraft recovery, you know, really like actually conducting war for 9 months. And then I came back, I did a few more assignments and left the Army after 7 years active duty as a captain, and then had already earned my MBA and my Master of Business Administration, and went to the corporate world and started working. And really early, as soon as I transferred out of the military, I lost one of my best friends in the world to just a tragic random stabbing attack. This was a friend that I both went to high school with and college. We went to West Point together. Mm-hmm. And then we also were in the Army together. He was one of my groomsmen at my wedding. And we went to Afghanistan together. And he had already gone to Iraq also by the time we went to Afghanistan. Got out of the Army a couple of years before me and was getting his graduate degree from Vanderbilt University and was on a spring break trip to Tel Aviv in Israel and was stabbed in a random terrorist attack on the street and died out on the street there in that moment. And that happened just 4 days after I transitioned out of the military myself. So that moment really unlocked all the trauma that I'd ever experienced in life. Like all of a sudden I was confronting my father's suicide and wartime trauma and abandonment from my parents and, you know, abandonment from my family and everything in between. And it left me really just crippled with trauma. And, you know, the PTSD was intense and depression and anxiety and a lack of purpose and a lack of passion and direction. And I just committed to like working really hard. And I was married at the time and was finding so much struggle in life. And I had such deep depression that I didn't feel comfortable talking to anybody about, and just I could just will myself through it. I didn't want to talk to the VA or talk to a therapy. I kind of mistrusted therapists from my childhood and didn't want to get on antidepressants because I told myself there was nothing wrong with me and I could figure it out. And then fast forward a few years, I ended up having to leave my company and take some time off of work just to start the healing process, and ended up hiking the Appalachian Trail from Georgia to Maine, which is about 2,200 mile journey. And I did it in honor of my friend who was killed. And I started on the day that he died and I finished 4 months later. And that was really the first time I had the opportunity. I carried his dog tags with me too, his family gave me. And that was the first time I actually took myself off the hard charging, you know, fast paced path of life that I'd been on and gave myself permission to start healing and to start experiencing vulnerability and opening my heart and my mind up to a different way of life than I had been experiencing to that point. And along the way, I met a lot of other veterans who were hiking on this trail and also had stories of PTSD and trauma and loss, and learn how to describe the experiences that I've had and talk through tears all the time, you know, talk about what I had experienced and talk to others about what they had experienced and recognize that there was so much healing that needed to happen. And it's hard to even start to ask for help. When I hiked the Appalachian Trail, a few months later, I went back to work and I went to see the VA and I started taking antidepressants and talking to a psychiatrist and slowly starting to feel a little bit better. And then the pandemic hit and it was now March of 2020 and I was living in New Jersey. It's kind of an hour away from New York City where the epicenter of the pandemic was really starting in the US. And my job went remote and so did my wife's, and a lot of depression settled back in and PTSD kind of reignited, and I wasn't able to escape this fog of just negativity and anger and resentment and depression that it was just kind of controlling my mind and my psyche. And it was right around that time I learned about psychedelics, and when a friend of mine mentioned that psychedelics were known to be very good for mental wellness and mental healing of different mental illnesses, in particular PTSD, yeah, and anxiety and depression and substance abuse disorders and things like that. And I didn't know where to find anything. I didn't know like how to access psychedelics. I just knew that I was a pretty self-reliant person at that point in time. You know, I'd learned to brew beer when I was in the military. I was like one of my favorite hobbies, brewing craft beer. And you know, I've found a lot of joy in that, in the community of it. And when I got out of the military, I was still struggling with anxiety. And at that time, I had discovered cannabis and explored medicinal cannabis to see if it would help me with my anxiety. And it did to some extent. So that was my first kind of foray into plant medicine. When I was going through that whole process, I still felt like I was always doing something wrong. You know, I was a West Point graduate and right, military officer and corporate leader, and like, am I taking drugs? Is this something, you know, is this unethical? Is this, you know, misaligned with what I'm supposed to be representing? And, you know, is this illegal? Where do I access these types of medicines? And ultimately, I just decided to grow my own mushrooms and see what it was all about for myself. And I did it in private. And it was right about the time that my mushrooms were finished growing. It was July of 2020 when my wife told me that she wanted to get a divorce after 11 years of marriage, which was a, you know, shock to the system itself also. But I recognized that it was the right thing to do, that we needed to move forward from our relationship because it wasn't serving either of us anymore at that point in time. And I had so much work to do on myself. You know, I had so much negativity in my life and in my mind that I kind of welcomed the freedom that she was giving us. Yeah. And it was a very amicable divorce. And I decided to move to Las Vegas, where I live now, because my brother and my family live out this way. And my job had gone remote during the pandemic. And I drove out to Las Vegas with my mushrooms in tow and everything I was taking with me to my new life in the back of my SUV, and moved into my house. And it was the first time I lived by myself. And I told myself when I got to the first weekend and everything was unpacked and I was settled, and I had my, you hear in psychedelics and psychedelic therapy a lot, the terms set and setting. So, you know, is your mindset in the right place to have a positive psychedelic experience? And is your physical setting, you know, organized in the right way? You're surrounded by the right people to have the right psychedelic experience that has positive outcomes. So I had done a lot of reading and research and set my intentions and picked my date and time and set up my environment correctly and picked my playlist and had a face mask, you know, eye mask, so I could do some deep internal work. And when that day came, I took my first dose of psychedelic mushrooms. And in that moment, everything shifted for me in terms of how I saw the world. It was like a very challenging, deep, meaningful, introspective journey over the course of 6 hours that took me through visiting like every major critical aspect or turning point or decision of my life. The feelings of resentment I had toward my father, feelings of abandonment toward my mother, the feelings of feeling desensitized by, you know, by war and being shot at and losing friends and seeing helicopters go down and, you know, getting rocket attacked at your base and just dealing with those traumas as a regular way of life, to my divorce and losing my friend and hiking the Appalachian Trail. It was like all in this 6 hour period of time, I was finally able to just revisit every aspect of my life that had made me in my psyche who I was. And I was able to reframe the narrative from a place of self-loathing and anger and resentment and victimhood to gratitude and appreciation for every step of my journey and forgiveness in my heart and love for myself and kindness for myself and kind of a newfound respect for who I was and who I had become and everything that I'd been through, and have the opportunity to really start to heal. And called my mom, who I didn't have a very close relationship with. And I FaceTimed her and I was just weeping, telling her, you know, this intense experience I had just had. And turns out she had experienced a lot of psychedelics herself in the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. And knew how to kind of talk me back to reality and tell me that, you know, everything's going to be back to normal. And, you know, you've been through a significant event experience. And, you know, the next day I woke up and I'd never felt so much levity in my life and in my heart and my soul and mind than I experienced in that moment. And it was a huge turning point in my life in a moment, you know, from one dose of medicine and not even facilitated correctly, right? Like just done on myself, right. But, you know, me in a point of desperation, really feeling like I needed something major to change the direction I was on and to change how I was perceiving life itself. And so I continued down the road of continuing to experiment with psychedelics and take other friends with PTSD and trauma through psychedelic experiences with me, learning about all the research that was going on, what was legal, what was not legal, you know, ketamine and MDMA versus mushrooms and LSD and ayahuasca and everything under the psychedelic umbrella. And then started working with my mom actually directly and my brother on psychedelic experiences together, and spent a lot of time deep healing with my mother, who at that point I had resented so much for sending me away to military school. And, you know, I kind of held onto that grudge as a fuel for most of my life, to then, you know, looking at her through a place of compassion and empathy, and that we had deep multi-generational trauma to heal. And we started doing that work together, and even reframing how we were able to look at, you know, my father and her husband that had taken his life. And instead of looking at him through, you know, anger and resentment, you know, looking at him through empathy and compassion for the tragedy that is suicide, and is desperation and hopelessness that I think affects so many individuals. In particular, a huge demographic of under that umbrella are veterans with a shared trauma and PTSD through decades of war and deployments. So last year I attended what was the largest psychedelic conference in history called Psychedelic Science 2023. And it was about 12,000 people, over 500 speakers. It was in Denver over the course of a week. And while I was there, it was the first time I was like, wow, there is really a community around this. And I don't need to feel like I have to be closeted or shadowed about this whole, you know, something that I really, really deeply believe has incredible life-changing potential when we're able to really understand how to use these modalities most effectively and for good, and you know, destigmatize them and maybe decriminalize these medicines and figure out how to integrate them into traditional therapy to make a significant impact on the individuals that are living and suffering with mental illness. And shortly after that, I got home and met a couple co-founders through that process and decided to launch what became the Psychedelic Exchange. And it's been about 6 or 8 months since then. And we're rapidly building our company now to be able to provide access to individuals that need this kind of therapy and just to educate about what's available beyond traditional talk therapy and, you know, pharmaceuticals, that there is the opportunity to heal the underlying cause of mental illness as opposed to just treating symptoms.
We'll be right back after word from our sponsor.
Continuing education is both a requirement and a learning opportunity, but finding the right CE provider can be challenging. AATBS, a Triad company, offers continuing education for psychologists, social workers, marriage and family therapists, counselors, and behavior analysts. CE courses are available both individually and as part of our new All Access Pass. All Access Pass provides a library of over 250 unique courses. That's more than 800 hours of CEs, with new courses being added every month. As a special offer, Behavioral Health Today listeners can save 15% on CE purchases. Visit us at aatbs.com/BHT and enter promo code BHT15 during checkout. That's aatbs.com/BHT. Check out our library and check off your CE requirements today.
Yeah. When you talk about, you know, the healing can occur, but before you're able to heal, and when trauma is pretty unique. You've said twice that you can't live a whole life with trauma. It inhibits, and in particular with military folks, soldiers. What's unique about their experiences, do you find? Not that psychedelics can't be used with other people, because they can be used with a wide variety of people, interpersonal challenges, families upbringing, et cetera. But in terms of veterans and their needs around the PTSD, what's unique about the experiences of a soldier that makes their trauma challenging, specific to their experiences?
I think there's this shared trauma that we all face, which is literally from things like being shot at and, you know, getting desensitized to, it could be in Afghanistan, you're getting air sirens letting you know there are rocket attacks coming all the time, and you're supposed to put on your helmet and run to a bunker. And after two or three nights of doing that, when you first arrive, you just become desensitized to it. And you're like, well, it's a small rocket, hopefully in a big base, and hopefully it doesn't hit me, right? You get this feeling of just, you don't even really care anymore. You're just hoping that it doesn't happen to you. And then you lose other friends, and you see other people killed, or you get shot at, and you lose friends to suicide who are struggling with the feelings of coming back from war and feeling, you know, lost and how to connect with themselves or with other people or with their spouses or their families after experiencing something so traumatic. You know, a lot of soldiers are in their late teens and 20s. I was 24 when I went to Afghanistan and turned 25 there, and I was, you know, in charge of 50 helicopters and, you know, like 700 people and running operations. So I think among military members, we're given responsibility. We're told we have signed up to pay up to and including the ultimate sacrifice. That's part of the deal. And it just becomes normal to you. You don't question it. You don't even want to question it, because going down that line of thinking is not going to do you any good. Yep. In terms of how you're able to actually do your job and survive from one day to the next. And a big part of, you know, being in the military, which I think is starting to shift, is bottling up your feelings and not showing any weakness. And vulnerability is a weakness. And talking about your emotions or your challenges, or seeing a therapist, or, you know, going to talk to a therapist about maybe I'm depressed, right? Like, you could lose your flight status as a pilot. There's all these different things that are culturally, you know, societally in that environment, preventing you from really being connected to yourself and understanding the events that you've been through a lens of trauma, as opposed to just like, oh, I mean, I only went on one or two deployments. I had a friend go on four or five, so I can't complain, yeah. Right? Like, let me just put my head down and keep moving. So I think there's something like 2 million veterans in the U.S. diagnosed with PTSD. It's a huge number. And because it's such a huge number, and because veterans, fortunately, at this time in our history, enjoy somewhat of a protected status in our country, versus, you know, coming back from Vietnam, it was a completely different story. And there's a much bigger focus on mental health and mental illness and traumatic brain injury and, you know, everything that goes under that whole bucket, that I think there's enough consistency among the experiences that we've had, and a big enough group of a demographic within this country, that we can really make a difference in how we are able to welcome and embrace new modalities of treatment like psychedelic therapy that do have such a greater impact on the reduction of the diagnosis entirely versus just the treatment of symptoms, that are well suited for psychedelics. And I'll give you just a quick statistic, which is really interesting. So currently, ketamine is fully legal in this country. It's typically prescribed off-label, but for the treatment of post-traumatic stress disorder, major depressive disorder, you can go to a ketamine clinic. This year, MDMA is in phase 3 trials with the FDA and set to potentially be legalized for the treatment of post-traumatic stress disorder this year. And in the next couple of years, psilocybin, which is the ingredient in the primary active ingredient in magic mushrooms, is also supposed to come to legality in the next couple of years. It's also in phase 3 trials, all showing incredible efficacy in the clinical trials and the research. For MDMA in particular, for instance, there's been a lot of research conducted by MAPS, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Science, to fund these clinical trials. And what they found in their clinical trials report, nothing short of extraordinary.
Yes.
That over 2 out of 3 people, so it's something like 71% was the last number that I saw, of individuals who participated in clinical trials with MDMA and had a series of 3 sessions with MDMA, with several integration sessions after each MDMA session. So you'd take the medicine, you know, under a facilitated environment, you'd have your 6 or 8 hour experience with an eye mask on and, you know, with a facilitator with you. And then after that event, you would have 2 or 3 follow-up sessions where you'd unpack what you experienced during the psychedelic experience. So after a round of 3 of those sessions over the course of 18 weeks, over 70% of individuals who participated in those clinical trials lost their PTSD diagnosis altogether.
Yeah.
Like, not just treated their symptoms, but lost that diagnosis, which is unbelievable when you think about the current process of, you know, going to talk therapy and finding the right therapist and, you know, spending 50 minutes, you know, once a week, maybe talking about what's going on in your life and trying different pharmaceuticals and titrating on your dosage and trying to figure out what works just to keep your mood stable so you can experience life with reduced symptoms. Yeah. We're not talking about that at all. We're talking about, you know, like a targeted event to go and eliminate your PTSD altogether. I mean, that's life-changing, and it's proven to be so effective at this point in time, particularly in conjunction with effective talk therapy. So they go hand in hand. Right. And it's not just the medicine working on its own. It's truly the medicine with the therapy and learning how to integrate the experience into the way that you live your life going forward.
That's what I so appreciate about your emphasis here, is that we know that, you know, historically talk therapy and some of the psychotropic medications for depression, anxiety, PTSD, they're good, but they can't get down to the level where the trauma is. In fact, we have something called the default mode network. They kind of like, it's almost like a blood brain barrier where you, certain medications can't go to the brain. The same thing psychologically. These traumas are down in our primary conscious, down here, our unconscious, and we can kind of know they're there, but we can't access them with talk therapy. In fact, talk therapy can be re-traumatizing. And all we do with the, you know, psychotropics is kind of mask some of these, maybe relieve some of these, but we don't go down, like you're saying, and resolve the core trauma. We don't take it away. We don't fill the hole in the sidewalk. We don't reset the cornerstone. And so someone just, you know, historically, you develop a good tolerance for managing your PTSD, which is okay. But what if we went all the way, like you're saying? And what if we were to use talk therapy, but to use that secondarily, use something like psychedelics or EMDR. There's other things we can use. But these things kind of cross down to that unconscious level and allow us to really resolve this in a really significant way. I watched a number of congressional presentations as they've been advocating for the very things you're talking about today, legalizing these treatments for folks that really not just need it, but can benefit from it. And their whole life is given back to them without that, you know, kind of piece into it. I've always tried to kind of think of a way to describe, you know, how PTSD plays out in someone's life. And this is a limited, but, you know, those that have ADHD, and you were sharing that was your experience. It's like someone with ADHD, very, you know, very reactive and hyperactive and difficulty with attention, and saying, you know, well, just focus on this paragraph and read it, you know, and tell me what it's saying. Come on, that can't happen. In the same kind of a way, you know, it's almost like the orchestra that's warming up, and in your head, that's the orchestra. And it's just everybody's playing these disjuncted and discordant notes, and you're trying to focus on things. And it's the same thing with the PTSD, even in a more traumatic way, because of the visions, the memories, the sounds, the emotions. Trying to do life with that going on all at one time, what an ask, and what an unfair ask. So I so love that you're saying, hey, let's go down and let's look at these medications, can actually go down to that primary conscious level, reorganize these things, change the narrative, like you said, and bring some empathy towards ourselves, bring some healing, bring some forgiveness. And then what you also said too is cool with your family. You talked about, once I'm able to do that, I'm able to see other people differently. Maybe my family, I can work towards understanding, and I can maybe even work towards some empathy and forgiveness, and maybe even offer some grace that I couldn't do before, when all of these things are in play and interfering. So what a very, very powerful emphasis you have to give people back their lives. How's it going overall, do you think, for veterans and the whole psychedelic movement? You talked about some that are going through the trials and everything else. Is it going to be in the next 5 years, do you think, that's going to be, hey, this is going to be a standard go-to treatment that we now have offerings for?
I sure hope so, if I have anything to do with it. But I completely agree with you. And I love some of the words you used, like grace, you know, and empathy, right? There's so powerful to changing our narrative around the entire context of what mental illness is and how it does impact like every aspect of your life if you're suffering from it. And and the future, I believe, is very bright. Currently, I think 1 in 5 American adults have mental illness. 1 in 20 have debilitating mental illness. Yeah. And what I've read is that is pretty alarming statistics, that on average, from experiencing a symptom of a mental illness to actually seeking treatment is on average 11 years, which is probably about accurate for me. Maybe it was even longer. And when you think about what's happening in that 11 years, like 11,
that's a living
11
hell
years
for
of
11 years. Yeah.
Yeah. And it could be, you could have, you know, it could be suicidal during that period of time. You could be completely pulled back from your job and engaging with your family. If you're a father who has PTSD from war, and you know, every time there's a loud noise or fireworks, you're shaking or hiding your closet, or you don't feel comfortable you know, going to your kid's soccer game because there's too many people, right? You change that whole aspect of somebody's existence. And now you have created these ripple effects. Right. You know, it's not just that this person is able to live their life better. Now they're able to be involved in their children's lives better. They're able to be involved in their communities. They're able to help other people. And, you know, for me, the healing journey is a beautiful thing that I think we all should experience in one aspect of it. I don't think anybody is entirely free from trauma. And no. And if you were, I think you'd be missing a big part of life because, you know, part of experiencing the heights of bliss and love and joy, you know, comes with those aspects being juxtaposed to some of the depths of sorrow and despair that we go through. And it's, you know, life isn't perfect, but I think it's more important to recognize that life is a journey, and doing that healing work is so important to being able to live a fuller, whole existence. Yeah. And once you have walked through the healing door, you know, all you want to do is hold it open for as many other people that, you know, it's not like, oh, I've discovered how to live well, but I want to keep the secret to myself. You want just to be surrounded by a world or a society where that's the norm, where that's we're comfortable talking openly about our vulnerabilities, and we don't need to shy away from confronting the challenging experiences that we've had that make us who we are and that create the diversity of experience that is our human experience and existence to, you know, collectively. And so I do think it's just incredibly important to recognize how profound just taking that step down the healing journey is, and doing it from a place that I believe creates hope, right? Like if I were a veteran and I were to read those statistics about MDMA or about some of the other trials and think to my experience of like, okay, traditionally the VA would send me to talk to therapists, and then I'd have to fail, you know, three rounds of SSRIs, and maybe in 12 to 24 months, they might grant me access to go get a, you know, a session of ketamine that I'm reading on paper is incredibly effective for more than half of the people that participate in, you know, in a ketamine session, that it's completely life changing. But also then I have to figure out, well, what's the government telling me? What's society telling me? Like, what do I, like, I'm afraid to lose my mind. You know, you have all these misinformation, societal norms, you know, stigmatization, legality challenges, you know, all these thorny issues that are between you and healing. But at least if you know that exists, then maybe it removes some of the desperation and allows you to see that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and there are potentially modalities that can be much more effective than the traditional ways, right? Like,
well, that hope right there. Yeah. That hope right there in you, and the message therein is what you're advocating for and what you've developed PsychX around. Give us a sense of PsychX. This is an AI powered program creating access to and education around an opportunity for the psychedelic industry and those that are going to be benefiting from this. Walk us through kind of in a nutshell about PsychX and what you're offering.
Yeah. Our vision for PsychX in the long run is so much bigger than where we are currently, but we're starting small. We're starting with creating a network of clinics and clinicians who can both list their practice with us, and we'll go through the effort of validating that they're functioning correctly. And, you know, if they are working with veterans, that they know how to work with veterans correctly. The platform itself helps a lot of clinics both improve their online presence. So we help with clinics find patients and be able to be found by patients. Right. So we use a lot of AI tools that help with your search, you know, search engine optimization, with your marketing and your branding and your visibility and your searchability, so that you can be actually found and listed in the places where patients are looking for you. And then the other aspect of the artificial intelligence is we really believe, and you know, this is for me, something really crucial, that we believe that mental health and mental wellness is incredibly personal. It's not a one-size-fits-all approach. You know, there's so much nuance in an individual human's journey through life and what makes you who you are with the psyche that you have and the lens through which you view the world. And because of that, you know, it's as tools like AI become so much more capable and so much more prominent in all of our technology and really the way that we go about living right now, we also feel that there's a very capable ability for AI to interface with individual patients very effectively to help somebody feel kind of understood and yes. seen for what you're experiencing, and then help you figure out what modality of care would be most effective for you to pursue. Yeah. So versus having to, you know, make an appointment with a therapist and, you know, kind of open up your entire background and figure out how to start taking steps toward healing. You could also start to interface with, you know, with an artificial intelligence, with you know, a chatbot, with tools that mm-hmm. that integrate a lot more in the same way that we've seen ChatGPT kind of just explode, because it can take a lot of disaggregated information from all over the place and about you in particular, maybe even you regarding what state you live in and what the specific legalities of certain medicines are state by state, you know, like Oregon and Colorado are on the cutting edge of integrating psilocybin and psilocybin assisted therapy into their care models and decriminalizing, you know, mushrooms and certain plant medicine psychedelics. So like understanding where we can meet individuals, where they are, so that they can get the care that's most effective for them as rapidly as possible to like completely, you know, narrow that 11-year time frame between yeah. experiencing symptoms of mental illness to actually seeking treatment, let alone the next process of actually going through treatment that may or may not be effective or could last a lifetime, or you're just managing your symptoms as opposed to, you know, getting to the root of yeah. of the underlying cause. And if we can shorten that gap through the use of artificial intelligence and technology and validating that clinics are, you know, are abiding by certain protocols that are good practices, and also helping to do our part to destigmatize psychedelics and mental illness awareness to begin with, you know, so I could stand here as a West Point graduate and former Army officer and entrepreneur or Army Ranger or whatever, you know, title you want to put over my experiences. And I can say, listen, you know, I'm not a countercultural, like, you know, hippie from the 1960s, right? You can cast me into whatever picture that you want to, but the bottom line is, like, I've experienced a lot of life, and I've experienced so much healing from psychedelics directly, and then have perceived and witnessed the healing of psychedelics in impact on other people's lives so effectively that, I mean, at this point, it's like, I can't look away. Yeah, I can't go through life allowing people to suffer without knowing that I've made it through the other side. I made it through the fire, and I see what life on the other side is like and how much more joy and gratitude and love I can experience the world with after having an effective healing experience.
Yeah, I think that's I think your mission, your heart, and what you're doing with PsychX is just ideal. And what a great time to be coming into this whole field with it emerging with it around the psychedelics and having something to be a launching pad for folks to really benefit from what you're doing, both practitioners and also those on the receiving end. Well, we're kind of winding down with our show today. I would love our folks that are listening in to be able to find out more about you, more about PsychX. How can they do so?
Thank you so much. And it's been a pleasure to have this conversation with you today, Graham.
Great to have it with you.
So you can find us at psychex.com, which is spelled psychex, psychex.com. And you can sign up for a newsletter, find out more information there if you're a provider or a clinic of those services, or want to learn about how to become a provider of those services. You can schedule time with us, and, you know, myself or one of my co-founders would be happy to jump on a call and just help educate you about psychedelics and what they are and what they're not, and help fill in some gaps of information. You can also go onto our website and learn about the different psychedelic medicines themselves and what psychedelic therapy is. Really, and good. You can also follow us on all the social media platforms. We're most active on Instagram. So at Psychedelic Exchange is our company Instagram page. And we put a lot of information out about psychedelics and psychedelic therapy and statistics around mental illness. Or you could follow me at the Josh Halu, the first name, last name, and I share a lot of information about psychedelic therapy there as well. And just stay in touch with us. And most importantly, if this is of interest to you and you want to learn more, please do schedule time on our calendars. Please do subscribe to our newsletter, inquire, right? Like, be curious about this. And if it's something that, you know, sparks some idea or some thought in your head or some desire to pursue some of this type of therapy, I would encourage you to follow that curiosity and see where it, you know, see where it leads you and ask the right questions and know that healing is possible for all of us.
Yes, it is.
Especially when you take into consideration all of the modalities and the integration of all the modalities together for mental health, and know that there's so much promise out there, especially with new psychedelic therapies and the integration of those into traditional therapy, that are just going to change the game for how I think our society at large is able to live full, healthy, yeah, you know, gratitude filled lives.
Yeah, I think that healing, like you're describing, that's our right. And I think you're doing right things, man. I so appreciate what you're doing. I so enjoyed having you on the show today for your story, all you're holding up, what you're putting together, ways you're going to be helping people already with what you're doing. So thanks for being on the show. Appreciate your service as well and what you're doing with PsychX. And I know that those in need are going to be surely benefiting from all you're doing. I would love to have you back on the show someday and talk about, as things are unfolding more and more, what you're seeing happening. But for today, really appreciate you being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Graham.
It's been really nice to have you here. I also want to thank you, our listeners, for dropping by and joining Josh and me today. It's always great to have you with us. Regarding our episode, I want to remind you that it and its resources and all of our other episodes can be found on our webpage at triadhq.com/PHT. Thanks again for being with us on the show, and we'll look forward to having you back with us next time on Behavioral Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community, and if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tribe Network, all rights reserved.